Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter Number 3, Hiranyakashipu's Plan to Become Immortal, Text Number 15 and 16. Nada darsha pratichchanam Valmika trinakichakai Pipilika bhir achirnam Medastvan mangsa shonitam Nada darsha pratichchanam Valmika trinakichakai Pipilikabhir achirnam Medastvan mangsa sonitam Nada darsha pratichchanam Valmika trinakichakai Pipilikabhir achirnam Medastvan mangsa sonitam Ladies, please. Text number 16. Tapantam tapasalokan yatabrapihitam ravim vilaksha vismita praha hasamstam hamksavahana. Please repeat. Na, not. Dadarsha, saw. Patichchanam, covered. Valmika, by an anthill. Trina, grass. kichakai, and bamboo sticks. Pipilikabhi, by the ants. Achirnam, eaten all around. Medha, whose fat. Twak, skin. Mangsa, the flesh. Shonitam, and blood. Tapantam, heating. Tapasa, by a severe type of penance. Lokan, all the three worlds. Yata, just as. Abhra, by clouds. Apihitam, covered. Ravim, the sun. Vilakshya, seeing. Vismita, struck with wonder. Praha, said. Hasan, smiling. Tam, to him. Hamsavahana, Lord Brahma, who rides a swan airplane. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Lord Brahma, who was carried by a swan airplane, at first could not see where Hiranyakashipu was, for Hiranyakashipu's body was covered by an anthill and by grass and bamboo sticks. Because Hiranyakashipu had been there for a long time, the ants had devoured his skin, fat, flesh, and blood. Then Lord Brahma and the demigod spotted him, resembling a cloud-covered sun, heating all the world by his austerity. Struck with wonder, Lord Brahma began to smile and then addressed him as follows. Purport. The living entity can live merely by his own power without the help of skin, marrow, bone, blood, and so on. Because it is said, asangho yam purushaha, the living entity has nothing to do with the material covering. Hiranyakashipu performed a severe type of tapasya, austerity, for many long years. Indeed, it is said that he performed the tapasya for 100 heavenly years. Since one day of the demigods equals 6 of our months, certainly this was a very long time. By nature's own way, his body had been almost covered by earthworms, ants, and other parasites, and therefore even Brahma was at first unable to see him. Later, however, Brahma could ascertain where Hiranyakashipu was, and Brahma was struck with wonder to see Hiranyakashipu's extraordinary power to execute tapasya. Anyone would conclude that Hiranyakashipu was dead because his body was covered in so many ways. But Lord Brahma, the supreme living being in this universe, could understand that Hiranyakashipu was alive, but covered by material elements. It is also to be noted that although Hiranyakashipu performed this austerity for a long, long time, he was nonetheless known as a daitya and a rakshasa. It will be seen from verses to follow that even great saintly persons could not perform such a severe type of austerity. Why then was he called a rakshasa and a daitya? It is because whatever he did was for his own sense gratification. His son Prahlad Maharaj was only 5 years old, and so what could Prahlad do? Yet simply by performing a little devotional service according to the instructions of Narada Muni, Prahlad became so dear to the Lord that the Lord came to save him, whereas Hiranyakashipu, in spite of all his austerities, was killed. This is the difference between devotional service and all other methods of perfection. One who performs severe austerities for sense gratification is fearful to the entire world, whereas a devotee who performs even a slight amount of devotional service is a friend to everyone, sridham sarva bhutanam. Since the Lord is the well-wisher of every living entity, and since a devotee assumes the qualities of the Lord, a devotee also acts for everyone's good fortune by performing devotional service. Thus, although Hiranyakashipu performs such a severe austerity, he remained a daitya and a rakshasa, whereas Prahlad Maharaj, although born of the same daitya father, became the most exalted devotee and was personally protected by the Supreme Lord. Bhakti is therefore called sarvapadi vinir muktam, indicating that a devotee is freed from all material designations and anyabilashita shunyam, situated in a transcendental position, free from all material desires. Prabhupada ki jai. Om Agyana Timarandasya Agyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam yena tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasari Gaura Bhaktavrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So we all have a tendency in this world to be very rebellious. That's why we're here. That even though we had such a perfect master as the Lord himself, Sri Krishna, in the spiritual world, still, we found some reason to be disappointed and to come here, to rebel. What to speak of not accepting the authority of some part and parcel of the Lord, be he or she a devotee or not. Our general tendency is that we don't want to accept any authority. We don't like to cooperate. This is the demoniac tendency. And Hiranyakashipu is doing that. Actually, although he's receiving this benediction from Lord Brahma, who's a devotee, he's the head of our sampradaya, he's receiving this blessing, this benediction from him in the upcoming verses to become very, very powerful. Still, Lord Brahma's whole goal is to actually usurp the same position. I'm sorry, Hiranyakashipu's goal is to usurp the same position of Brahma for his sense gratification. So how can there be any good qualities in such a person? Or they might be qualified by such severe austerity, the likes of which we could never do, and certainly has strength and intelligence and all these sort of things, but because he's simply using it for his sense gratification, exploiting a devotee, a daitya and a rakshasa. So this is the demoniac tendency. This is the tendency of this material world, really, is everybody wants to be the master. Nobody wants to be the servant. Except, of course, for God, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who wants to be the servant. He says, Gopi Bhartu Parakamalayor Dasa Dasa Anudasa. We can take lessons from Lord Chaitanya about what's the best position in this world. If Krishna himself wants to come and be the servant, it should at least give us some hint that it's worth thinking about. He doesn't just say dasa, dasa, dasa. He says dasa, dasa, anudasa. One translation of the word anu means very, very, very small, like atomic. Another part, and sometimes the Supreme Lord is called Vibhu, and the Jiva is called anu. Infinitesimally small. He's saying dasa, dasa, anudasa. Maybe a very, very small servant of other devotees. Again, our demoniac mentality comes out. We think, well, if I'm going to be a servant, then I'm going to be a big-time servant. You know, I'm going to get something for it. I'm going to be recognized. Everyone should know I'm the big servant. You know, I do it so well. Like when I came here a couple of years ago, some of you might remember I was fortunate to get to travel with my spiritual master, His Holiness Devamrita Swami. On a bit of a tour. It's my first time leaving the nest of the New Zealand yatras and seeing the great wide open of ISKCON. And of course, as you're going around, you know, with your spiritual master, there's a lot of you get a lot of perks. People come to you, oh, wow, you're a servant, you know, wow, isn't that great? You're so incredible. Can I get a darshan? You're like, oh, I'll see if I can pencil you in, you know, see if I got some space here. Really taking advantage of it. Everyone brings you the Mahaprasadam and whatnot. And, you know, you want to be like a big servant, be recognized for being the servant. In fact, sometimes, even right here in L.A., when Maharaj would be leaving the temple or something and a lot of people would be coming up, you know, taking pictures and whatnot, speaking to him, I would kind of shift a little bit into the picture, make sure I was noticed, make sure I look like I'm doing something really important. It's not satisfying just be the servant. I wasn't quite on that devotional level yet. It's actually a demoniac mentality. That because we've been so abused by the material nature, by prakriti, by trying to control prakriti, we now think, this is our logical conclusion, well, if I get my own little piece of prakriti and I control it, you know, I'll kind of like get revenge against my frustrated attempts to enjoy material existence. It's very demoniac. And so the Bhagavatam says there's no good qualities in such a person. There can't be any good qualities in such a person who, even in the association of devotees, is trying to exploit, to take something. Like everyone knows the story of Ramachandra Puri and his spiritual master, Ishwara Puri. Ramachandra Puri, because he wasn't very devotional, despite having such a qualified spiritual master, at the end of sorry, his spiritual master, Madhavendrapuri. At the end of Srila Madhavendrapuri's pastimes, Ramachandrapuri, he was eager to take the opportunity to be the guru and instruct his own spiritual master. I don't know, you should be meditating on Brahman. I think most of you know the whole story. This is the mentality. So the Bhagavatam says, Harav abhaktasya kuto mahadguna manoratanasati dhavato bahi. How can there be any good qualities in such a person? It might look like they've got good qualities. Intelligence, you know, opulence, strength, austerity, as we're hearing here about Hiranyakashipu. It might look like it. And we might even be a little bit affected by it. Oh, this person's so smart, this person's so nice, this person's so wealthy or whatever, and we get attracted. But Bhagavatam says, kuto mahad guna, almost mocking. Where are the good qualities? What an ultimatum. It sounds like a strong statement from the Bhagavatam, doesn't it? Where are the good qualities? But it's also explained in a really nice sort of poetic sense, which is easy for us to meditate on since Rath Yatra is coming up. But we all know that during Rath Yatra, everything is blissful. It's labor. I mean, it's hard labor, and yet devotees are just ecstatic. In fact, even these complete strangers, people who have no idea what's going on, have never seen it before, are just over themselves in ecstasy to be engaging in that labor of pulling the cart, the Rath Yatra. And they have that look on their face, you know. Everyone's seen, everyone's been to Rath Yatra. Just complete strangers just walking up with the brightest smiles, and they remember it their whole lives. And yet the Bhagavatam describes that these persons who are not devotees, who have never done devotional service, who have no good qualities, manoratha, they're also pulling a cart, but it's the cart of their own minds, manoratha. You can see them. If you go out in Sankirtan sometimes, you're distributing books, you're out in Harinam, and some people just don't want to cooperate, don't want to just, you know, take the ecstasy that they're passing out. And they have that look on their face, like they're just pulling the cart of their mind. Has everyone seen it? You know, that look? It's like, you know, just complete frustration. They're laboring. They're actually laboring. They're not pulling anything physical, except their own minds. Manoratha. It's such a pitiful condition, if you think about it. And you go up and talk to them and ask them, hey man, what's on your mind? And I'm like, let me open up the cart and show you. You know, I got this and I got that. It's a heavy load, you know. Manoratha dhavato, manoratanasati dhavato bahi. They're always just meditating on a material platform. And so it's a pretty strong statement from the Srimad Bhagavatam that there can be no good qualities in such a person who's not a devotee, who's not ultimately dedicating everything to Krishna. That ultimately, no matter what they do, no matter what sort of valuable aspects of the character are there, they're simply using it for sense gratification. And when push comes to shove, they will push you aside and take what's necessary. There's no good qualities. So that's the standard, basically, of Srimad Bhagavatam, is that we're learning what is pure devotional service. And we have to take that seriously. Prabhupada quoted this verse, Harava Bhaktasya Kruto Mahadgunam. How many times? Hundreds, maybe. Prabhupada didn't compromise, saying, well, you know, I mean, they're good people, and let's be kind, and things like that. He had a totally different perspective. In fact, one time, here's a good story. One time, when Srila Prabhupada was in a room in India, he's having a room conversation with some devotees, and there were some guests, some Indian gentlemen there. And Prabhupada, in his classic style, was just lambasting everybody. You know, men, women, children, mountaineers, everyone, just putting everyone in their place, you know. They're all in Maya. Really going hard, as we've heard so many times. And there is this Indian gentleman there. This is recorded in Tamal Krishna Goswami's diaries, by the way. There's this Indian gentleman there who, you know, he wanted to show Prabhupada. He knew a couple of shlokas and correct him. He said, oh, Swamiji, I think you know Krishna says, Pandita Samadarshina, a Pandita is supposed to see everyone equal, right? Pandita Samadarshina. Why are you going around criticizing everyone so much? Pretty common sort of critique. And Prabhupada said, Pandita Samadarshina, I see that everyone has the potential to become a devotee. I see that everyone needs Krishna's mercy. And therefore, I have to point out, this one's in Maya, that person's in Maya, they're in Maya, this person's in Maya. This is Prabhupada's own answer. Pandita Samadarshana means I can see everyone has the potential to be a devotee. Because he can see that potential, therefore he has the right, in fact the obligation, to criticize the material condition. If we can't see that potential, you know, maybe we should be careful as we're swinging punches. The point is, Prabhupada never compromised. You know, he set a very high standard. Even here in this verse, Anyabhilashita Shunyam, pure devotional service. So he's always pointing it out, free from all material desires. But we're thinking, you know, you know, just be a little bit gentle. You know, we have like this conception of spirituality in a modern day as being something really sensitive and really gentle and all accepting and all encompassing. And then when people run into devotees, you know what they think of us. If you go out there distributing books, you know, people have gotten books before. They see us and they're just like terrified, like these guys are heavy, you know. It's not just all one, you know, it's not all lovey-dovey. Which reminds me of the other story. There's this devotee's mother in New Zealand, this woman who wanted to give us a little bit of advice as well about how we can, you know, connect with more people, reach a broader audience. She said, you know, you Hare Krishnas, everybody loves the Hare Krishnas. Everybody loves them. Great food, great music, good people. But you know, you'd do so much better if you just made a few adjustments, you know. You just adjusted a few things. We're talking about the regulative principles. If you just made a few adjustments, you'd hit a much broader audience. More people would be interested. Isn't that what you want? You know? She's going off like this. And then she said, oh, but anyway, I know a few people. I know a few Hare Krishnas. You know, they don't follow so strictly. And they're basically just like us, you know, except they believe in Krishna. They're also out drinking and carousing and having a good time. And that's really nice, you know. I like that. So it sounds like a good perspective. It sounds very open and loving. But actually, it's not. Actually, it's not. When Srila Prabhupada is setting such a high standard for us without compromise, it's actually his mercy. We have to also be merciful to those persons who can practice the highest standard of devotional service. If we were to subscribe to, like, as a protocol, a constant compromise, how would that be merciful to those persons who can attain the highest standard? So that was Srila Prabhupada's, I think we can clearly say that Srila Prabhupada's intention, that despite coming to a place where, you know, as he commonly mentions, is full of mlechas and yavanas, still he set a high standard of devotional service and expected devotees to do it. And despite the fact that so many persons were struggling and fell away, certainly Srila Prabhupada wasn't naive to the fact that would happen. He didn't compromise certain principles. And we have to appreciate that that's, you know, Srila Prabhupada's mercy upon us, the mercy of any devotee who's in an authoritative position to have to tell us this is the standard of behavior in devotional service. It's actually their mercy. But our conditioning is such that we're feeling the exact opposite. No, no, hey Prabhu, don't lord it over, you know. We're all supposed to be servants, you know. Don't try to be the controller or whatever. We can't recognize that actually it's for our benefit. There's this devotee whom I met while traveling a while ago. He's here in California. Some might know him. Anyway, he's in very well standing. He's been practicing Krishna consciousness for like 30 years or more. And he's well to do. And he told me something really interesting. He gave me kind of an honest revelation when I was staying at his home, traveling with Maharaj. In his humility, he was saying, you know, I've been a devotee for like 25 years. Can't quite remember how many years. A long time, though. I've been practicing, you know, I'm in the Grihastha Ashram and having so much difficulty. It's difficulty at every step, you know. And you know, when I pick up Srila Prabhupada's books, I just see, like, I'm not even coming close to what's expected. And he said, and this is what he's telling me, honestly. He said, now I'm feeling like, you know, I can't read Prabhupada's books. He said, you know what I read? I like to read the Prabhupada memories, you know, a little bit gentler, the stories, Prabhupada traveling, the jokes, you know. I like the part that's soft as a rose, and I skip the hard as a thunderbolt sort of sections. He said he was actually admitting, again, it was in his humility, he does read Prabhupada's books, but he was admitting this sort of trepidation or hesitation that it's, you know, Prabhupada is so forward, I can't handle it. We have to recognize that that's the mercy of a pure devotee. Otherwise, how would we know what pure devotional service is if he doesn't clearly define it on every single page of Srimad Bhagavatam until it gets through our skulls? How else would we know? Failing to hear that, failing to hear the high standard from Srila Prabhupada and his representatives, what happens is that, you know, community will start to set a new norm, make their own compromises. And when, you know, the bulk of a community does something, it just becomes acceptable. We see that throughout history, especially in, you know, spiritual or religious organizations where the incentive is not monetary, where everyone's a volunteer. You know, we find that there's a communal compromise and the whole standard decreases. It rarely goes up automatically. It usually goes down automatically. In fact, there's a statement, apparently Srila Prabhupada said, that you don't have to advertise the lower standard because it just happens automatically. No matter what high standard you set, there will always be someone who can't quite meet it. So we advertise the highest standard. And so we'll curate a community where there's just a lot of, you know, compromise, a lot of justification and rationalization and quick thinking and quick talking. And everybody says, oh, you know, everybody knows that when you're, you know, when you have a child, when you just had a baby, you can't chant 16 rounds. Everybody knows. Certainly some of you have been around longer, have heard this before. Everybody knows. If you've just had a baby, you can't chant 16 rounds. It's just common knowledge. Everybody knows you can't follow all four regulative principles all the time. You know, we have to have a, you know, every once in a while, you're going to have a little bit of a, like a vacation. Everyone knows. Everyone does it, right? And, you know, you find those people who kind of like, yeah, of course, everybody knows. And you think, oh, you're a real friend. You see, you're sensitive. You care. Not like these so-called Prabhus, always going around, bossing us around, you know. But is that really merciful? To encourage a lower standard of practice? Is it really mercy? We should have the intelligence to see that no, it's not. That real mercy is to set the highest standard of spiritual behavior. And those persons who take it upon themselves to do that, whether voluntarily or involuntarily, obviously, I'm placating for a little bit of mercy here because I involuntarily had to take that job recently. Those persons who have to do that, though, Krishna does say that they're very dear to him, who are the flag bearers, who set the standards of devotion. He says, "Na chatasman manushesu kashtin me priyakritama." Someone who's really presenting this great wisdom to the devotees. No one is more dear to me. What was that wisdom? Sarvadharman prityaja mam ekam sharanam braja. Abandon everything and just surrender to me. Pure devotional service. Krishna is saying, someone who's really taking it upon themselves to teach that, they're very dear to me. Because as we're hearing, the tendency in this material world is that we don't accept authority, even from Krishna. What to speak of, you know, regular devotees who are just parts and parcels, infinitesimal jivas. No matter what their title, it's hard for us to do that. So we don't want to, and if we utilize our intelligence, we should not resent that Srila Prabhupada is so, how do you say, he's so frank about his expectations. We shouldn't resent that, or resent the fact that there are so many devotees who have that as their service to remind everyone that a higher standard of devotional practice is possible. But our attitude should be that since I'm having so much difficulty, therefore let me just be the servant of that person who does perform a high standard of devotional service. It's the attitude even of God himself, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Gopi bhartu parakamala yor dasa dasa anudasa. What qualification do I have to be some Prabhu? But if I can be the servant of the servant, then despite all of my faults, you know, the highest level of devotion is possible. It's possible. So this is the stark contrast in the mood and mentality between demons and devotees. That Hiranyakashipu, despite all of his seemingly external good qualities, his power and his austerity and his intelligence, still there's no good quality there because he wants to exploit, utilize others for his sense gratification. Whereas a devotee, you know, regardless of what faults they may have, if they're sincere and genuine in their service, they'll come to the highest standard of spiritual practice, pure devotion. Anya bilashita shunyam, gena karma dinavritam, anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhakti ruttama. This verse, which Srila Prabhupada quoted so many times, means to have no other desire than the desire of the Lord. Anya abhilashita shunyam, to cut out all other desires except that which pleases the Lord. Gyana karma dhyavitam. Gyana karma adi. Not just gyana and karma, but everything else you can even imagine. To completely cut all that out. No motivation for material benefit. Anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhakti ruttama. This is the most favorable. To be favorably engaged in the service of the Lord for His pleasure. That's pure devotion. So we have to know what that standard is by reading Srimad Bhagavatam, hearing from Srila Prabhupada every day, no matter how much it hurts, no matter how bittersweet it might be. That's how we can attain pure devotional service. I think I'd like to finish with a point, ask if there's any challenges or corrections from some of our senior, more experienced devotees in the room. Or if there's any questions from anyone else. Yes, Adam.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for a nice class, Prabhu. I was wondering how we reconcile the... Because the conditioned soul has four defects: imperfect senses, tendency to cheat others, make mistakes, and tendency to be an illusion. So how can we reconcile the four defects of a conditioned soul with accepting the principle of authority? Does that make sense?
Yes. Pretty common question. So I've got my Prabhus, you know, the boss, and sometimes it seems like they don't have perfect senses, or they're certainly not in that category of an Uttama Bhakta, right? This is the argument, really, of the Ritviks. There's nobody here who's a, you know, Maha Bhagavad Uttama Bhakta devotee, so therefore we don't accept any authority, except our own minds. The point is that as a servant, it's our only duty is just to humbly serve and to not take into account what slight imperfections there might be in your Prabhu, whomever that is. Within reason, of course, if the person is not doing anything like egregiously evil, you know, amassing nuclear weapons or something. but if there's some fault in that person, the duty of someone who's in a subordinate position is still to maintain an attitude of reverence and to humbly serve. And then you're not at fault. You're not at fault. If you're simply the servant, it doesn't matter if your master has some imperfection. As one time my Guru Maharaj was saying that sometimes when we become so familiar, you think, oh, the spiritual master can't find his shoes, or sometimes he cuts himself while shaving. What was that one they made to Prabhupada? If he wears glasses, right? Wasn't that some argument somebody made? I see this so-called guru wears glasses, therefore he has imperfection. You know, he's not perfect vision or whatever. But these things, the nectar of instruction describes that it's like, just like in the Ganges River, there's all sorts of mud and foam and all sorts of things there. But one should still have the intelligence to perceive the spiritual quality of it and the benefit. So similarly, we have in a community like this an authority structure, and there might be devotees who are not perfect, definitely myself included. And yet still, your duty as a servant is to just humbly serve and not take into account whatever slight imperfections are there. And you have to know, of course, that your Prabhu has his Prabhu, who's in a position to be aware of those imperfections, those mistakes, and to correct them. I know for myself, I have my senior god brothers, like Shastakrit Prabhu, Prem Sankirtan, who often point out, mercifully, sometimes when I can improve. And our gurus, of course. So our position as dasa, dasa, anudasa is actually really simple. It's the most fortunate position to be in. That's why Lord Chaitanya himself wants to do it. Actually being a Prabhu in the society of devotees is not It's not all that's cracked up to me. But perhaps some of these experienced devotees have more to say on that, or some correction, retort. Okay, thank you very much for your kind attention. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam. All glories to the assembled devotees. Hare Krishna.